PNC Bank brings you Call of the Wild Money Moves. Shh, listen.
Hey, guys.
That's the sound of a multi-level marketing pitch.
This is life-changing, you guys.
Sounds like she wants you to buy lots of essential oils.
They are so essential.
And then have all your friends buy essential oils.
Are you more of a geranium or a lavender fan?
Don't look her in the eyes. Guard against wild money moves with PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865.
Your social media feed delivers plenty of advice, but it doesn't know you. It doesn't ask questions. It doesn't give physical exams or order tests. Doctors do. At the American Medical Association, we believe the best care starts with a real conversation with someone who understands the science and your unique health. So stay curious, ask questions, but when it's time to make decisions, make them with a doctor. Learn more at AMAHealthVersusHype.org. That's AMAHealthVSHype.org.
Merkel Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow this head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg, and I look over, and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You're listening to The Confessionals with AI Tony, as the real Tony is stuck overnight at an airport trying to get home from a conference he spoke at in Utah last week. If you have an encounter you'd like to share on the show, shoot Tony an email at contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com or visit theconfessionalspodcast.com and use the contact section to reach him. Either way works. For more weekly shows, consider becoming a member at theconfessionalspodcast.com/join or through our YouTube channel. Both offer the same content, so choose the platform that suits you best. And don't forget to check out merkmerch.com for cool designs. The Mothman shirt has been flying off the shelves. Lastly, head over to merkelfilms.com to stream the adventure documentaries. The latest, Sasquatch and the Missing Man, is still sparking conversations about what really happened to the missing man, John. Today we have Kelly in the studio, a filmmaker from the I Believe in Bigfoot project on YouTube. He'll share his experience investigating a North Carolina property known for frequent Bigfoot activity investigated by the Squatch Watchers. The land, owned for over 200 years, features mysterious occurrences like rock throwing, strange smells, and vocalizations with a belief that it may hold spiritual significance. All right, friends, today we have Kelly Lockman in the studio. How are you, man?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me.
Man, I'm glad you're here. And we're going to be talking about your rock collection today.
Yeah. I've been an avid rock collector my whole life. These are my favorite ones.
Oh, man, I had that joke in my head for about 30 minutes now, and I was just waiting to...
Dad jokes.
But yeah, man, so you reached out to us, and you're a filmmaker. And you said to me when you first came in here that you've been a filmmaker your whole life?
Yeah.
So is this something that you've been doing like professionally your whole life or what?
Yeah, on and off. So I started making films with my friends when we were in high school, went to film school and worked in the industry a little bit here and there. And then I got into acting. started writing my own short films. Did a few short films over the past couple of years. One of them, which for me did pretty well. It won quite a few awards. I think it turned out really well. And then, so then from there, I was going to do a follow-up as a feature. And that's what got me into these different waters.
Yeah. So filmmaking, you go to film school, and that school wasn't Full Sail, was it?
No.
Okay. Because
no.
It seems like everybody went to Full Sail, you know?
But yeah. I looked at it.
Yeah.
I did. Yeah. I looked at it. I did.
It was really popular because we're around the same age. And like when I was leaving high school, I know Full Sail was a very popular landing spot for anybody that wanted to do that.
Totally.
Their marketing was on point for back then. They suckered everybody into it. And yeah, I say suckered because everybody I talked to that went to Full Sail regrets it. So kind of like me in the Bible college thing. So.
Well, so I did a combination. It was a Bible film. It was a Bible college and a film college.
Really?
So yeah. Gotcha. It was a little Seventh-day Adventist college.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But they had a film program. So yeah, I'm not a Seventh-day Adventist per se, but
hey, if you could knock two birds out with one stone, right?
Yeah, totally.
So You're actually friends with Ron Moorhead, and we were talking about that because I'd love to get Ron on the show. But I mean, when we're talking about having somebody like Ron Moorhead on the show, I mean, what can I talk about that hasn't been talked about? Probably not a whole lot. So what can I offer? An in-studio thing. So I want to get him in studio. I think that'd be the way to go.
Yeah, he'd be great. He's an awesome guy, man.
So you met him though through this Bigfoot stuff, which I want you to kind of launch us into as far as this journey that you have, you know, come upon, because let's start off with the softball thing here, which is in the beginning of all this, did you even believe in Bigfoot?
Kind of. I mean, I've always been interested in strange and unusual things, you know, but Bigfoot was never really that exciting to me. The idea of like some relic animal that we haven't found didn't really get me jazzed up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way I got into the Bigfoot thing was I was writing a screenplay and I wanted to do something low budget because that's all I had. Right. And so I thought maybe monster movie and Bigfoot's a great candidate. So I wrote this like whole murder mystery scenario where the culprit's a Bigfoot. Right. And then met David Becerra, who runs the Bigfoot Museum in Blue Ridge.
Yeah.
And we hit it off really well. He's super, super nice guy. And he let me hang out at the museum while I was writing, which was amazing as a writer. Like that was the most immersive, like, you know, experience you could have.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like hanging out in that Bigfoot world. And he's in my ear, you know, you really should just do a documentary. There's so many stories out there. Like just do a really good bang up documentary. Cause he had seen my short film and he really liked it. So yeah. I was like, you know, maybe I will. And so I started the process. I just wanted to interview some people and do the typical, like, have someone's story and then shoot it cinematically, like do some really cinematic reenactments. But one thing led to another. I got invited out to a habitation and then kind of all hell broke loose from there.
It always starts at the habitation.
Right?
It always starts there. First of all, I want to say David is somebody who I've never met personally face to face, but our interactions online have been always that of like, we're buddies and we've always been buddies. And it's just like, he's one of those people that just, I always feel like he's one of those guys that is just, he treats everybody with kindness and respect and just a really great guy.
He's a great guy. I can't say enough good things about David. He's been amazing.
How far is his museum from here? Do you know?
3.5 hours, maybe. Oh, it's worth the drive.
Yeah.
It's worth a day trip for sure.
Cause I'm thinking we might have to hit it next week. Cause, I'm actually going to Georgia next week and I might have to hit that up. What's the museum called again? I want to say
the Expedition Bigfoot.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. I was going to say Bigfoot Museum. I was like, that's totally wrong. All right. So you start the documentary journey and you get invited to what habitation?
So I started off just interviewing people. That's how I met Ron. I reached out to Ron, cold called him kind of thing. And he was receptive and he was like, sure, I'll do an interview. You know, so I was interviewing a bunch of people and just happened to be, it was all just like the way it unfolded was just almost miraculous. You know, I went to this little like Bigfoot meet and greet before a Bigfoot festival where there was a bunch of people out there, like Turtle Man, Mountain Man, all these guys are out there. And David Martin from the Squatch Watchers, who are a investigation team out of North Carolina, I met him and we started talking. And by this point, I had researched it enough and like read Ron stuff and gotten into it to kind of open my, not really open my eyes so much, but kind of wake me up to the idea that a lot of people that are in the Bigfoot world are looking at it as not just an ape, right? Yeah. Like as something else, you know?
Guilty.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Me too. And that really interested me. Then it started to make sense because to be honest, I always thought the idea of Bigfoot was kind of dumb because people are really good at hunting, you know? They're really good at it.
I'm telling you, man, that's why when I first started getting into this as an adult, I was like, I don't know what all these stupid people are doing, but I'm going to find this thing real fast.
Right.
Yeah. And I just figured I'm going to go out there on weekends when I'm not driving truck. I'm going to find this thing and mystery solved. Because I believe it was out there.
Yeah.
And found out that I'm still looking.
Yeah.
I'm still looking.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. So, yeah. So I just happened to meet David Martin at this event and I asked him for an interview. Didn't know anything about the Squatch Watchers at the time. And as we were talking, I could tell that he believed that it was something other than an ape as well. And he had such confidence with his area. He was like, every time we're out there, we get this, we get that every single time. And I was like, can I come? You know?
Really?
And he was like, we'd love to have you. Yeah, we'd love to have you out. So that was that. And I was still on the fence if I was going to go do it because I was still a little skeptical, of course, about the whole thing. And I didn't know how much more work I wanted to put into the film because at that point, I thought my film was almost done because I had so many interviews. And that was the whole goal, was just the interview style documentary. But then the more I talked to Ron, we became friends and reading his book, I was like, man, I really do want to go out there. I really do want to go out there, you know. And I was like, Ron, I really want to go do this, man, but I don't have anybody to go with me. And he was like, I'd go with you. I was like, really? I was like, all right, well, let me call these guys I know and you know, we'll see what happens. So Ron went out to the habitation with me. And
this was in North Carolina?
In North Carolina, okay. Yeah. Ron stayed out there with me for about 3 days. And then I stayed out by myself for a few more days after that. And then I kept going back and doing more and more investigations because we got activity. We had activity. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that the activity, the habituation area that you're talking about is the Squatch Watchers area.
Yeah.
I literally was texting with Tyler last week about coming. The guys are going to come out here at some point and sit down with me and
Taylor?
Talk. Taylor. I'm sorry. Yeah. I have a guy in my phone named Tyler Cook and Taylor Cook.
Gotcha,
and
so
it's just, but they're talking about coming out here and then we're going to go out in this area and do crazy stuff together too. So,
There's stuff out there.
Oh yeah, there is. Yeah. So tell me about the area, there. Man. Like, I mean, so you're going out there and you're not really into the topic as far as like, you know, even on the level of me, you know, like it's just, it seems like you're really not sure. You're probably not even totally sure what you're getting yourself into at this point.
Well, I guess at that point I had digested so much information. And like I said, I got to hang out with Ron a lot, like spent the night over at his house and, you know, and the whole thing. And I knew that these guys weren't lying. And that's actually part of the reason I started doing the documentary, because I actually did start to really believe the witnesses. And I was like, well, this is actually kind of a compelling human angle to like give these people some voice, a valid voice, you know? So I did believe them. And I found that Ron's approach when they recorded the Sierra Sounds, being just very unobtrusive with what was going on and just kind of letting what was going to happen. I really felt like that was the way to go.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do anything, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was a typical like hooping in the woods kind of a thing. Although we did do some of that.
Like it's just, it's like a rite of passage.
Yeah, totally. I actually did believe that something was going on, but you know, I'm like, what are the odds that while I'm here with Ron Moorhead, I've got cameras running, that we're going to actually have anything happen?
Right.
Right. So I just thought if nothing else, it would be some interesting B-roll for the thing. However, I did give myself a week, and the property owner was gracious enough to let me stay there for a week. And I was like, well, if I'm going to get anything, I might as well just go for it. Mm-hmm. Right. So I was about 50-50 whether I thought I was going to find anything or not, but I did.
Well, before you get into, you know, sharing your experiences on the property and stuff, I know you have an active YouTube channel and mm-hmm. you're posting, you know, documentary and docu-series type mm-hmm. stuff, videos. Tell people where they can find that before we get too far into the conversation.
Sure, yeah. The best place probably to find it is I Believe in Bigfoot Project on YouTube. I have a playlist that's just I Believe in Bigfoot. That is the docu-series. I've got 3 episodes out right now. The first one is just some like initial interviews that I did. Like I said, that the first one is almost like what the vision of the original film was going to be. It's just mm-hmm. an interview-style documentary. And then the second one focuses on Ron Moorhead and the Sierra Sounds. And then the third one really begins the investigation. I kind of tease the investigation in the first 2 episodes, but then this next one is really when we go to the property and start doing some investigations.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So what happened? I mean, you're going out there. Take us through this journey.
Yeah. Yeah. So so Ron and I went out there by ourselves the first night. It was a very interesting piece of property. I don't want to give too much away about the property because the landowner was, you know, wanted to maintain privacy and everything. Sure. But his family's owned it for hundreds of years, like 200 years. And so there's a lot of trails, and he's even like graveled a lot of the trails. So they're actually very easy to access. The property's easy to access by golf cart. Not all of the property, but a good portion of it is easy to access by golf cart. And that's where, you know, most of the investigation, that's what we did for a lot of it. It was the cushiest Bigfoot investigation you could ever ask for. Right. I don't know if you're familiar with Josh Cutchin or not. He's a researcher, author, brilliant guy, but he went out there. He's like, what is this? I was like, dude, it's Bigfoot Disney World. I don't know what to tell you, man. So anyway, we go out there and, it's just Ron and I, we went out, because I didn't know where they had any luck or anything. The Squatch Watchers hadn't come out there yet. And so we just kind of winged it. And we didn't really have a lot of activity that night. Ron was kind of adamant, like, don't run cameras. Like, mm-hmm. don't run anything this first night. Like, let's introduce ourselves to the area. You know, Ron's done this so much. He was like, let's just have an experience. Let's just, you know, let the experience be number one, film number two, exploiting these things, number three. Yeah. Right. And so the first night we didn't run anything. We just hung out, Ron and I. And the only thing that was really odd, and I know you'll appreciate this, we had a lot of owls.
Mm.
Yeah. And this one in particular, we could hear it in a distance, and we started talking to it, and it came to us, and it landed. I mean, it sounded like it was right behind our head talking to us.
What possessed you guys to talk to an owl then?
Because Ron and I are both crazy. I don't know, okay. Not really crazy, but you know, no, we just answered the call back. Because, you know, I've...
Okay, so you're talking about, like, you're making owl noises. Yeah, you weren't like, no, hi, Mr. Owl.
No, we weren't like, hi, Mr. Owl. No, gotcha. we were making owl noises, and it came to us. Like, mm-hmm. it literally flew and landed right behind us. So that was interesting. And, you know, I was somewhat aware of the owl, I don't know what you would call it, totem.
Holding a significance.
Yeah, holding some kind of significance. And I've had some new age friends in the past, and we've had experiences with owls.
They've
and
all
this
had
stuff.
Owl tattoos.
Yeah. No, it's just, you know, it was just interesting. It wasn't, I will say though, the first day we were there, we did smell the smells that people talk about. That was one of the biggest Bigfoot symptoms of the whole trip were the smells. Mm. And they would hit you like a ton of bricks, like the most foul. It kind of smelled like a wet dog or a wet horse, but not quite. Just like really unclean, you know, like that. I mean, the term unclean spirit really comes to mind, you know, it's just a foul odor, not quite sulfur, but maybe a little sulfur. Like I've never smelled it before. I've never exactly smelled that smell before until then. And I was trying to be really rational because I didn't want to just, oh, everything's Bigfoot, right? Like I really did try to debunk anything. I mean, there's stinkweed does exist. I don't know if you're familiar with that. There are weeds out in the woods that will emit odors. Bears can have really strong odors, you know, but you couldn't trace the smell. You literally, it would come, sometimes it would hit you like a ton of bricks, as if there was an animal standing right next to you. And then it would just disappear. And there was no way to trace it.
Yep.
It was just impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I found that interesting. And there was a, the next night, there was a particular location that the Squatch Watchers had been getting a lot of activity. And that was right around a gifting area they had. And it was also right around an area that David Martin did not like to go in, hated going in it. And he had talked about this many times. They've had it on their YouTube channel. They did some spirit box stuff out there. He almost fainted. Like, it was this whole thing. Like, they really had bad juju in this one little acre of land.
But they do gift on that acre of land?
Not on it. So probably 200 yards up from it, maybe not even 200 yards up from it.
So like the acre of land is almost like a no-go zone. They don't like going to it, or he doesn't like going to it.
He really doesn't like going to it, but the other guys don't really, they don't really make it a point to go in there.
Hmm.
I did.
Perfect.
Yeah. So anyway, we, in between their gifting spot and that area, they were like, for whatever reason, this place has a lot of activity and you're probably going to smell the smells and you're probably going to get rocks thrown at you. And it was really interesting. This is actually in the third episode of the docuseries. A lot of times, those first couple of nights out there, I ran a lot of audio exclusively. Again, I was trying to take pages out of Ron's book, like, what are the most likely things. And he was like, you know, Ron said they never were able to capture anything on film or video or anything like that, or photographs. And he was like, I don't know if they, you know, feel more comfortable not showing themselves that way. Like, if they're more comfortable with vocalizations or whatever. So in my mind, I'm like, maybe we can capture some vocalizations. So we were just running audio. And I don't know why it came over me, but I was like, I knew something was going to happen. I just had this really weird feeling that something was about to happen. And I told the guys, I was like, look, even if a rock gets thrown, like, nobody react, nobody do anything, you know? And like 2 minutes later, a rock lands right behind my feet, like literally right. Like, it hit so close that rocks on the trail bounced up onto my pants.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was like, well, that's interesting. I mean, it seemed like they responded to me. It seemed like they were testing me, right? Because I said, don't react.
Yeah.
And you know, in my mind at the time, too, I'm still thinking, like, am I just getting punked?
Yeah. I know.
And so I was like, guys, did anybody throw a rock? Did anybody kick a rock? Like, what? You know? Yeah. They're like, no, that was thrown, you know? And so throughout the course of that night, several rocks got thrown. It happened several more times. The smells again would come and go. Later that evening, it started to get late into the night, and the Squatch Watchers and Ron were like, we're good. Like, this has been fun, but like, we're gonna have to call it a night. But I was fired up, man. I was like, nah, I don't think so. I think I need a little bit more, you know. And I talked David into staying out with me, and we went to the area that he really didn't like. And so I actually went in to it.
So David, who doesn't really like it at all.
He stayed on the trail.
He just
took me there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He just took me there. He was like, I'm going to be right here, brother, you know? And I was like, all right, man, well, here we go, you know? Yeah. So I went in, and this is all in the third episode, actually. I immediately saw some, like, what looked like potential trackways and some broken sticks, some like freshly, like where something had stepped. Or kicked something, freshly broke a little twig. You could tell because how wide it was, like it had just been broken. And we had seen, or David had seen, some movement down in that area from our vantage point earlier that night. So I don't know if some, you know, he was like, I saw like a shadow move into that area. So I don't know if that's when it happened or what, but we could hear things rustling around. I had a thermal with me, but there was a lot of rhododendron on the trail. It's very thick, viney stuff, and you really couldn't see into the trail. I'm sorry, into that area. It was just very well blocked. The only creatures I saw that night, I think it was a rat. Might have been either a very small possum or a rat. but didn't see anything until the very end of the night. David and I are getting ready to leave, and I see this very large thermal signature. And it doesn't move. And, you know, again, in my mind, I'm trying to justify, like, all right, well, it's big. It wasn't here all night. This is new. But it was so big that it didn't seem to have a form. It was just like this big blob of heat out there. Now knowing what I know, in your documentary, with the folks that had the habitation in the ridgeline, I'm sorry, what were their names?
The Browns.
The Browns, right. So the way their property has that ridgeline, and they say that the creatures kind of poke their heads up.
Yep.
Same layout. So as soon as you, eventually I did go deeper into that area. Once you go into that area, it slopes down pretty dramatically. So what I think I was looking at was, it could have been multiple creatures, I don't know, but they were, whatever it was down in that pocket. And I have no idea how big it was, but we were, you know, throwing rocks and all that kind of stuff at it. Never moved.
You were throwing rocks at it?
Yeah.
Oh, I like you.
Yeah,
I like you. You're the special one I want to take with me. Yeah,
let's
we got some crazy ideas. Have him do it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it didn't move.
It didn't move. No, wow. It didn't move. And so then I start to try to like rationalize it. Well, I'm like, well, maybe it's not biological. Maybe it's like decaying leaves. Maybe it's, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, because it wasn't there later. It wasn't mm-hmm. there any other night.
How far away were you from it?
So I didn't know at the time how far away we were. Probably maybe 100 feet, maybe not quite.
So not that far.
Not that far. Yeah, not that far. But it was, again, it was impossible to tell the depth of it through the thermal camera, because so much was obstructed by brush. I just knew that there was something hot out there somewhere in that direction, you know. So anyway, that was kind of that for that night. And then the next day I went into the area. I was like, guys, I really want to go like look into this area in the daylight and see if we can see anything. And it was funny because like each day I went a little deeper into that. And it doesn't seem like a large piece of ground to cover, but I don't know why it took so long to get deeper and deeper into it. But I found, well, not just me, the Squatch Watchers and everybody found tons of stick structures. You know, and I know people scoff sometimes at the idea of a stick structure because, of course, deadfall occurs. Of course, weather does weird things. I get it. I totally get it. But this was like something had woven a basket. Basket wove.
So like
stuff.
Clearly intelligent design.
Clearly. Okay. I mean, knots, like the whole thing. And the brush that was utilized in the structure had been like stripped of the branches, and it was very elaborate.
So let me ask you this, because I mean, with stick structures, I go back and forth on it. You know what I mean? Because like I hear people talk about stick structures and I'm like, yeah, I think that stick structures could have some significance. And then I'm shown a stick on a trailer, like, see a stick structure. I'm like, come on, man. Like, I don't know what to, I don't know what to make of that. I don't know what I'm looking at, you know? But with what you're describing, that sounds like it's very intentional, designed. You said this is private property. Mm-hmm. What are the odds of the owner going out there and doing this?
You know, I think slim to none. I couldn't possibly think of a motivation to do it other than just, nobody was making any money off this. You know, I didn't pay anybody. I couldn't pay anybody. I could barely pay for, you know, anything. You know,
my question with that though was not as far as trying to hoax as much as it is to, is the owner out there just on his property whittling,
messing around,
just doing whatever he wants to do. And, you know, these crazy Bigfoot guys think there's Bigfoot out here. I don't know why. Maybe they never shared notes and they're like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I do know what you're saying. I don't think so, because the owner was very invested in the idea of us finding something.
Okay.
Yeah, he's very invested in
that. So he wasn't ignorant to the topic?
No, he was totally convinced. He kind of got the ball started with those guys in a way. He cast a print years and years ago. There was no... I kept thinking, like, I mean, clearly some sentient constructed it. There's no doubt in my mind that something sentient constructed it. I was like, man, it's either a cult, either we're looking at some cult stuff, or or there's some, or there's a Bigfoot out here, or whatever you want to call it, you know? And it was an interesting structure. The one really elaborate one was a very interesting structure because it didn't seem to serve any practical use, but it did look like a frame of a, almost like a hut. Like if you imagine like the skeleton, like the beginnings of a hut, like you could have thrown a tarp over it and went, it had a doorway. And later I would find a lot of like just doorways, literal just doorways made out of sticks and some of them very tall in the middle of the woods. You know, of course I'm thinking, this is a portal. Yeah. Like, you know, what is this?
Yeah.
But it didn't seem to have any practical significance. I don't know if it's a ceremonial significance. I don't know what it is, but I know it wasn't quite natural. And then a really bizarre aspect to some of these stick structures that I've seen, and I don't know if you've ever seen this. I've never even heard anybody talk about it that I'm aware of. There was an X structure out there, and there was a stick glued to the tree above it.
What do you mean by glued? I mean, that's obviously figurative.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, no, glued, like with some kind of, I don't know if it's sap. I don't know what it was that attached the stick to the tree, but it was glued to the tree.
Hmm.
And of course, you know, vines and branches and things like that can entangle themselves, and trees do absorb. You know, like you've seen the pictures of like a bicycle growing in the middle of a tree, or a tree, you know, growing around a bicycle or sure. whatever. Like that kind of stuff happens. But this wasn't a vine. It was just a dry stick stuck on the side of a tree.
Hmm.
Right above a very like prominent X structure.
So with this structure, how high up was the stick that was glued to the tree?
It was about head level.
Really?
It was about my head level. Yeah.
So you could get a good look at it.
Oh yeah. I took it down. I pulled it off, and this is like later in the adventures when I did this.
No, I'm just thinking about what you're about to say, because I'm sure everybody's listening. The people are like, "Don't touch the stick structure."
Oh, you wouldn't. Oh yeah. Well, just wait. Just wait. Yeah, I know. That's what's funny about this whole process, and I'm sure you've run into this, like. I've had people be like, "Oh my God, you're taking Bigfoot stuff. You're yeah. you know, you're messing."
How would you look if somebody took your lamp out of your living room?
Yeah, yeah, I know. I'm picking on Bigfoot, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Just keep doing it. Be a bully.
Yeah,
come at me, bro.
Yeah, you know? Like we got cameras. We're trying to get you to come at us. Like if it takes me taking your stick,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, exactly.
If that was the key to it, I think we'd all be very successful.
Yeah, right. So the interesting thing about that stick, you know, people talk about mind speak, right? Now, I never experienced mind speak per se, but there was something very unusual about that area for sure. And there were several moments out there when we would have activity that I would start to feel like I almost felt like I was about to drop into a hallucinatory state. Mm. Like I really felt like my consciousness just kind of shifted a little bit. Like all of a sudden I was like, I feel high, like literally high. I wasn't, but I felt that way. And inevitably whenever that would hit, something weird would happen. So I don't know, you know, of course Ron goes into the interdimensional thing. I know your audience is familiar with all these theories.
Yeah.
I do lean that direction. I do think there was some kind of spiritual energy that was moving around, and it literally had an effect on me, on my perception, and on my memory. So that stick's a great example. I was filming that. So this was several days later. I never felt like I'd given that area justice on film. Partly because when it all first started, I was so rattled. Like I would go back and review my footage. I'm like, man, this sucks. Like I was just so in the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Observing and trying to film. And so I was like, I didn't really do that area justice. I want to go film it again. And I saw, that's when I first noticed that stick, and I was like, man, I'm going to take this home with me. And so I pulled it off and then instantly dropped it.
I just instantly dropped it,
left it, and then didn't think about it until I was driving home. I was like, why did I drop that stick? You know? I don't know, man.
Have you ever seen this book by Christopher Noel?
I have not. No, that looks cool.
So, I'm bringing it up right now because I know I'll forget later, but I have it somewhere. I don't know where it is, but he wrote it back in, I think it was probably about 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically the most common types of stick structures that he has come across in North America. And so with this topic of conversation, that would
be cool to read for sure.
Yeah. It seems like it's like something to have in your backpack when you're out there kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. And it's interesting because now that I know what to look for, you can, there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Like basically any area that I've seen since this, cause I went deep, I took a deep dive into it and started to investigate other areas and stuff. That's not going to be in this particular series. It's almost everywhere that people report this stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, you know, I don't know if they just get bored, you know, I have no reasoning for why they do it, but because it doesn't seem to serve any practical use. I mean, maybe as a marker, but I don't think Bigfoot gets that lost.
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, if we're talking about it being this thing that, you know, we're in its living room. I mean, I don't get lost in my living room, you know? Yeah. Like, I don't need to be reminded which way the bathroom is.
Yeah, I think it's maybe like a gang tag, you know? Maybe it's just marking their territory. Like, you know, maybe it's their way of, you know, not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but, you know, like the like the lesser magic kind of thing where you got to show, you reveal a portion of what you're going to do kind of a thing. Or you know, there's this whole kind of concept of revealing the method, if you will.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe they're saying, look, it's obvious if you know what to look for, you know, and a lot of Native Americans would say that that's true. I mean, they referred to them sometimes as the stick Indians, right? Yeah, I think it's their way of showing themselves and going to this kind of magical idea. This is a total, just reminding myself. One thing that I've noticed, and I know this isn't true for everybody. I know the Sierra camp was way out in the middle of nowhere. But one thing that I've noticed in the areas that people have reported this kind of activity to me is that I seem to get diminishing returns the deeper into the woods I go. It seems like more often than not, you'll see a lot of clear areas of activity right next to roadways. And I don't know if it's like their way of butting up into the world of man or something. But it does seem that way to me. It does seem that they really, it's almost like an animal behind a fence. And they come up right up to the fence, you know?
That's a great point. That's that animal behind the fence coming up right up to that. I never thought of it, that analogy. That's actually gives you something to imagine why they come in so close. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they do like messing with us, you know? I mean, so anyway, to go back to the story.
Yeah, please.
Right?
Yeah.
So the second night I was out there with the Squatch Watchers, it occurred to me, after all those rocks, that I had a thermal camera and that I didn't look for a single rock when they were thrown, you know, and
would they be picked up?
They would be hot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Duh.
Yeah. Because the heat transfer and it was pretty cold out there. So I was like, if a rock gets thrown tonight, I'm going to find it with my thermal. And it did. And I found it.
Really?
Really. And this is the rock.
Are you serious?
I swear.
Wow, man. So this is the rock, because I saw it on video. Mm-hmm. So this is the rock that...
That's the rock.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. So this was hot.
That was hot, yeah.
On camera, you pick it up. Now, did it make contact or what?
So this... like I said, we drove a golf cart out there.
Mm-hmm.
And this landed on the golf cart.
Really?
Yeah. And it was so hot that even though we had run the motor in the golf cart and everything like that on the way up there... it was hotter than the base of the golf cart.
So how does that make sense?
I don't know.
See, it wasn't
hot to the touch, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was holding heat better than even like the engine components and stuff on the golf cart.
So, theoretically, are you saying that visually on the thermal should have physically, when you touch it, been warmer than an engine?
Well, no. What I'm saying is that something had it in its hand, either some, for whatever reason, right? Whatever delivery method you choose, the most obvious answer would be that something held it in its hand long enough to transfer enough heat to be hotter than the residual heat that was left on the golf cart, because there was still some residual heat on the golf cart, right? But it was hotter than that. So either something had it in its hand for a while, or something stranger happened. I know.
No, say, because I was going to go weird, but let you start it.
So the unusual thing about the rocks that were thrown, right? Everybody talks about rocks being thrown. I don't think they were thrown. I think they just fell out of the freaking sky, man.
I'm telling you, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, they did. They did. And if you listen to all the videos, and I actually have, there's an old video that I put up that's just about rocks, and it's just Bigfoot throws rocks. It's nowhere near as good of a production quality of the series. But while I was doing all these investigations, I was like, man, I just got to get some of this stuff out. I've just got too much stuff. It's just interesting. So I did this video that's all about these different rock throwing incidents. And there's one where I'm, sorry, excuse me.
You're good.
There's one where I'm carrying a 360 camera and a rock hits my leg, a pebble hits my leg. And I pause it where you can see, and it's very pixelated, but you can see the difference in the tones around my pants and the rock. You can see where the rock hits me. And then you can see vibration on the ground where the rock rolls. That rock came from freaking nowhere, dude. Came from nowhere. I looked all over the camera. It came straight down because I'm walking with this camera, right? I'm walking with this 360 camera in my hand. It just came straight down and hit my leg.
Have you ever left home and had that nagging feeling, wondering if everything would be safe while you're away? I know I have. I remember years ago hearing about a neighbor who had a break-in while they were on vacation. It shook me, and I knew I needed a security system I could trust for my family. That's when I found Simply Safe. And let me tell you, it's been a game changer. What I love about Simply Safe is that it's so easy to use and gives me peace of mind whether I'm home or not. With their Fast Protect monitoring, their team can respond within seconds if an alarm goes off, and they even have live guard protection so they can see and speak to intruders to stop them in their tracks. The best part? No long-term contracts. You can cancel anytime, and for less than a dollar a day, you get award-winning protection without hidden fees. Simply Safe has been named the best home security system by U.S. News & World Report for 5 years straight. So protect your home with 50% off a new Simply Safe system, plus a free indoor security camera when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/confessionals. That's simplysafe.com/confessionals. There's no safe like Simply Safe. We need to get a 360 camera.
Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah.
My buddy Brian has one, and we my first experience with it was out probably about a month ago with him. And I've seen the footage on his channel. He has a Black Mass Paranormal YouTube channel, and the footage that he put up with us going through the woods was pretty wild. Just because, I mean, you're looking at this camera and you're like, how is that going to work? But it works.
It works. Yeah.
Wow. It's pretty wild. So it drops down out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because what I was going to say was, first of all, with the rock and the golf cart, did it land and stop on the golf cart?
Yeah. So it bounced like off like the railing of the window of the golf cart and landed in the golf cart.
In the golf cart.
Yeah. On the floorboard of the golf cart. Yeah.
I mean, I wonder what the heat transfer is of an object coming out of a portal.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, exactly. That's my question, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, people are going to say, well, this was staged. Like, how easy is it to throw a rock in the dark and say, ooh, look what we found? Mm-hmm. I get that. Yeah. I totally get it. I don't expect you to believe me. I don't know that I would believe me, you know. But I'll say this to the Squatch Watcher's defense. Each one of those guys was holding a microphone. I was the only person with a camera. I listened to every one of their audio channels to make sure that nobody threw that rock because you would hear it.
You'd
because
hear
the mics were sensitive and you would hear the movement. Nobody moved when that rock got thrown. Nobody did. And at the time that this rock fell on the golf cart, David Martin was actually throwing rocks into the area of that that weird area that I was talking about.
Really?
Yeah. He was throwing rocks into that area because that's one thing that they do. They'll throw rocks and then they'll get rocks answered back. So he was like, I'm going to throw a few rocks. And so, and he had actually a little body cam. So you can see him throwing his rocks and you can hear they're going off in this direction. And then Taylor and Tate, myself, are probably, I don't know, 50 to 75 feet away in the other direction. And it lands right in the golf cart on the side where we're at. And at the time, I thought that it came from, there was a hill up that way. I thought something threw it down from the hill because it didn't, you didn't hear it come through trees. There was, it was a very thick area of woods. And so you would think if something was coming from either direction, you would hear it go through leaves. You would hear something because you could hear that in David's rocks when he's throwing them in. Right. So either something threw this so far up in the freaking sky that it landed
like
down.
So far back you don't hear it going up and out.
Yeah.
But it, oh, that's logistically kind of hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, those guys did not fake that. Mm-hmm. And I did not fake that.
So it was a response to the rock throwing that was already happening.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So that was exciting. I was like, well, that's pretty cool. I mean, it was cool that I got it on film, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely cool. I've never experienced a rock throwing before, but, I'm open to it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You should. It's, you'll never be the same.
Yeah. Well, I've been charged before and that definitely changed me.
Yeah. So. I bet. Yeah. No, I haven't been charged. No, I haven't had that experience yet. So still got some on the bucket list.
Yeah. You know? Well, we all do. So you're out there, you guys are doing an investigation. That was day two, right?
That was day two.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to jump off the investigation, but maybe, no, definitely not off the investigation, but throughout the entire week you were there, did you hear anything, any vocalizations?
So,
or is that day three?
Yes. So I did. And this is what's so interesting about this project, because I had several different microphones that I was running at the same time. In retrospect, the mics just weren't really the best for that situation. That being said, you can kind of hear some faint vocalizations on them. I don't know how much I'll be able to pull out in future episodes that people will really be able to digest and hear what I heard and hear what, you know, we all heard. Yep. But yeah, we did hear some vocals. One of the things that I heard that was kind of hard to describe is I believe that there was a lot of animal mimicry going on. For instance, several weeks after this, a friend of mine and I went out there. This was when I had that 360 camera. And we were looking at, I was showing him some stick structure stuff that I'd found. And, you know, I was like, you know, and he was fairly impressed at this point. This was before the rock got thrown and before the really bizarre, I'll save it. Yeah. But before it heated up to a fever pitch, if you will, we were looking at some stuff and we both heard the sound of like a dog barking way in the distance across the river. So this property also has a river, Little Henry River runs through it. And we could hear something sounded like barking across the river. And it seemed to be in response to us looking at what we were looking at. Mm. But it didn't sound like a dog. It sounded like a person mimicking a dog. But it was very faint, but it sounded like woof, 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 like that. Like it,
really?
Yeah, really. And my friend noticed it before I did. He was like, do you hear that dog? And I swear, this is absolutely true. I don't know how much of this is captured on audio. I hope some of it, because I still haven't really digested and edited that portion of this yet. I don't know how much I'll be able to pull out. But I looked at him and I was like, that's not a dog. And when I said that, it started to become more and more dog-like as it barked.
Really?
I swear that's true. It was the craziest thing, man.
Wow. So it starts out like bark, bark, bark. Yeah. And you're like, that's not a dog. He's like, woof.
Yeah. And then it started to sound more like just a regular dog. I was like, dude. Wow. Yeah. And it was funny watching him experience that, because he was not really a skeptic, but had no skin in the game whatsoever. Mm. So he was like, yeah, that's weird. Let's dismiss it. Yeah, that's weird. You know, it kept escalating. And then we saw some stuff that you couldn't dismiss. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, I mean, you're familiar with the show. So what are the odds that you had Dogman barking at you out there?
So I'll be frank. You know, I Bigfoot has been seen out there, and I have seen things that I don't know what they are on my thermal camera, mm-hmm. but I don't know what it is. Mm. I don't know what we were dealing with out there. I call it Bigfoot because they've cast prints out of there before.
Didn't you get a print out there too yourself?
I didn't cast a print. No, I saw some, what I believe were prints, but none of them were of the quality that you would want to cast. Mm. It was kind of, you know,
I feel like I saw on video a print though.
That's the Squatch Watchers.
That's the Squatch Watchers.
Yeah.
They found that
they
print.
Did. Yeah. They found
it. It was huge. Yeah. It was very defined.
Yeah. Very defined. So that happened to be in like a sandy area. Most of the stuff that I saw was in like really loamy dirt. Mm-hmm. So it would be, I did see footprints. I definitely saw, you know, hominid like footprints out there, but they were all beat up. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't anything that you could clearly say, like, that's what this is, you mm-hmm. know? But yeah, I mean, I call it big. I say it's Bigfoot because why not? You know, it's got all the symptoms, but I can't definitively tell you that I've seen a Bigfoot out there. They, mm-hmm. they've seen them. You know,
they have seen them on the property.
Yeah, they have seen them. A lot of people have seen them in the flesh, if you will, out there. I did not personally see one with my own eyes. The only creatures that I saw out there were on thermal. Mm. Yeah.
Man, I'm having, how far are they from Charlotte? Because I'm going to Charlotte in like 2 weeks.
Pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's pretty far. I'm not really sure. Probably it might maybe closer here than Charlotte.
Well, then I have to pass it on the way.
Yeah.
I might call Taylor and talk to him, because maybe I can stop through there and we can do a night or two there on this other trip. So
yeah. It's worth it. Yeah.
All right. So keep going with this story. So
yeah, sorry, man.
I don't know. I tend to derail. So let's get it back on track.
Right. So all right. So at that point, you know, we've had the rocks thrown, all this kind of stuff. Then the Squatch Watchers kind of got busy. Because this is now the weekend's over, right? Like I'm out there for a week. Ron's out there for another day or so. So I was like, I was about to be on my own. On this property for a while, which that's when really a lot of the fun kicked off, to be honest. So the next day, Ron and I are out there just kind of kicking around. I was like, Ron, I'm going to go deeper into this area with all the stick structures and just see if I can see anything else. And so I go down there, and this is in the episode that I just released, this one image. I go down there and I see, So that area, I do want to describe it for you. When you go, there's almost like a veil of foliage in front of the where the road is. Mm. But as soon as you go past that, it's like rooms. Mm. It's definitely, the whole area is well trodden. Like it looks like a bear lives here, is what it looks like. There's a lot of the vegetation is like smashed down, where like things are moving around or laying down. And then as I went, and it appeared that blinds were constructed all throughout it. So it wasn't just that the vegetation was sparse in areas. It was that these things had manipulated the vegetation to create blinds and structures that they could hide behind. And I think that's what I was throwing the rock down into. There, I later found this room that went further down in that elevation that I'm talking about. And there was a pair of deer mandibles, like the lower jaw bones, both of them, of a deer, which is very unusual to find both of them in the same spot, because they're detached from one another. So if an animal was scavenging, you would pull this bone off, it would go over there, that bone would go over there. These two were just laying on top of each other. No deer skull, just those two bones were laying on top of each other in a room that was about the size of this room mm-hmm. that we're in. And I say room because it's just like all the ground's padded down. Very well hidden, hidden by a very deliberate blind. And those jawbones are in the middle of the room and they'd been defecated on.
Really?
Yeah. It was like something out of a Stephen King movie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was just so perverse. Yeah. I was like, and this, I don't know if I'll get in trouble with Ron for saying this part of the story, but it's funny. So Ron was up in the golf cart while I was doing this, and I shouted, and I literally, the thought had already crossed my mind. I was like, Ron, there's these deer mandibles down here and something's been defecating on it. I didn't say defecating. Yeah. And he goes, piss on it. I already was. I swear I already was, man.
What do you think I'm doing?
Yeah. So that's why me and Ron are simpatico and our nutty approach to it. Later, I was like, man, I probably shouldn't have done that. But, you know.
I mean,
did it
get activity?
I don't know if it, I think it did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my presence there did. Mm-hmm. I think because I was very much exploiting clearly their territory. Mm-hmm. Like it was clearly their territory. And I was like, man, this is like a treasure trove of interesting things to look at. I'm going to take pictures of everything. I'm going to film everything. I'm going to see what else I can find down here. So I think the fact that I didn't really show it any reverence or any fear, I got the impression that they found that interesting. I think that they just didn't quite know how to take me because I had made my mind up going out there that I wasn't going to react in any way. I was going to show no reaction. And I jokingly said that I wanted to go out there and play hard to get, mm-hmm. right? And just see what would happen. Because everybody goes out there like, gimme, 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 mm-hmm. right? So I was like, I'm not going to do that, but I'm also not going to be afraid. And I'm just going to do what I want to do, you know? And, you know, this goes to, for me, this goes to an idea of having dominion over the planet. Mm. And I believe that humans are special and that we're made in the image of God and that we have dominion. And mm-hmm. so I'm not going to be, if some monster tells me it's their dominion, I say no, you know,
my house.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was just like, I'm not going to kind of feed into that. And so I do think that stirred them up a bit. I think that really, like I said, it got them curious. And the reason I say that, and I know you're going to love where this goes, and I know part of your audience is already thinking, dude, this guy's out to lunch. But the reason I say that is because then I started seeing orbs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I started seeing little green, it was a green ball, and it was about the size of a golf ball. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, dude, that's a dragon or a firefly. You're like, you're so stupid. It wasn't. This was very late October. And the nights that I saw it was extremely cold. And it would be luminous, totally luminous. It was as bright as like a lightsaber, like a green lightsaber, but like a ball. And it was very beautiful. And when you saw it, like, it entranced you, you know, and then you go into these fairy stories about, you know, don't follow the lights and all this kind of stuff. Like you want to, because it's so hypnotic. It feels flirty. It really felt flirty.
Wow. I've never heard anybody describe it that way. It felt flirty.
It really did.
That's interesting.
It really felt flirty because it would be like, I'm going to let you see me and then I'm not. And I don't know if you've seen, those pictures that Scott Carpenter took of the orbs where it's like a streak of light.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly what they do. So it would be it would just be there, a solid, luminous, round object. And when I would look at it, it would go and streak and be gone. It was so wild. I got one on film, kind of, but it's so far away and it's so pixelated, the images. I don't even think it's worth putting in the documentary. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm talking about it. I don't have any qualms about talking about it. I don't know that it'll wind up in the documentary because it's just something that I can't, like I saw it, but I can't say, hey, here's what I saw, you know? But I did see it. I did see it several times. And it was after I had been in that territory. And I started to think that it was a change of tactic because initially I think the idea was to generate fear. And this is just my, I don't know, you know, my rationale. Initially, I think the idea was like, I'm a big scary monster. This is scary, right? And I think when I didn't really play with that energy that much, I think that it tried a different tactic and showed itself that way. Mm. That's my theory. I don't know. I could be totally wrong.
No, I mean, you said you were just on Sasquatch Chronicles not too long ago. Wes is somebody who's been talking about that for a while. You know, the idea of there being lights on properties that Bigfoot is habituating. You know, when there's habituation of Bigfoot on a certain property, there tends to be a lot of lights that pop up too. And it kind of goes with this pattern. I don't know what that pattern is. I don't know if he has any conclusions to it other than, you know, is it like, I mean, I we can go the weird, you know, we can go the weird and say, is Bigfoot inside that orb? Does it travel that way? Can it show itself in that form? You know, there's so many woo-woo things you can go with it, but we don't know.
Well, we don't know. For sure, we don't know. It definitely did appear to be operating under intelligence, though. Mm. I will say that. I mean, so the first time I saw it way in the distance. And I was fascinated, but at first I didn't know what I was looking at. I thought, is that a firefly? You know, I'd heard that the Squatch Watchers said that they'd seen UFOs out there. They'd seen weird lights and all this kind of stuff. So I saw it. And this was actually after Ron had left the property. So at this point.
So you're alone.
I'm alone.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I saw it in the distance and I was like, man, that's really weird. But they had talked about it. But again, in my mind, I'm really not trying to jump to all these conclusions yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, maybe it's just whatever. And then I saw it out of the corner of my eye in the woods near me, like probably, I don't know, 30 feet away at that point. It was still in the distance, but it had gone from, I don't know, 100 feet away to like 30 feet away over here to my right. And every time you would look at it directly is when it would kind of streak out of existence. I've never seen anything like it. Mm. The last time I saw it was a different night and it was very close. It was about as close to me as that wall.
Wow.
Yeah.
How big was it then?
It was the same size, about the size of it. That's why I say about the size of a golf ball or a ping pong ball or something, because I got a good look at it. Mm-hmm. And it was just chilling.
Just floating.
Just chilling, watching me.
So, I mean, we going back to the firefly idea, we know that they light up and then they go out. I'm trying to think if I ever saw a firefly leave a streak. I can't recall. I'm not saying that it's not impossible, but what you're saying, what you saw, it was a steady light.
Mm-hmm. It was a steady light.
Just glowing, sitting there. And so it's not, I mean, I think it only takes 2 seconds before you realize you're looking at a firefly because it just lights up and goes out.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, this was a steady light. Mm. It was a steady light and it was so bright and it was much bigger than a firefly. Like at least, like I said, about the size of a golf ball. Yeah. But again, this is not something I can prove or have footage of in any meaningful way. You can hear me talking about it on my like microphone and stuff, but yeah. So
hold on a second. Before you go any further than that, then this just hit me. So you're saying it was right there and you weren't able to get good footage of it?
No, because I had my camera over here because I'd seen it over there. Again, it did the same thing twice.
Because it jumped. That's
so,
right.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm like kind of looking around and then out of the corner of my eye, I can see that there's something there. And when I turn to look at it, that's when it leaves.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yep. I got you.
Yep. And you know, again, people think that this stuff is so, I totally understand the skepticism. Believe me, I totally understand the skepticism. You know, the same way with gifting sites, right? Like people will leave gifts out and we definitely played with that a lot. You leave gifts out and then they exchange or move things around and people are like, dude, somebody else just moved it around, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And the area that they had the gifting site set up, they'd had game cameras up there forever. And the only thing that was ever captured on those game cameras is anomalous lights. Now, the weird thing about that, to me, very weird thing about that, is that something clearly lives there. Clearly. And there's clearly paths from that weird area all the way through the gifting shop, the gifting spot area.
It's a gift shop.
There's clear pathways.
Wow.
Wow. that camera should definitely pick up on, but never did.
So they have cameras pointing at the gifts that they're leaving?
In that direction of the road, they had not like right on the gifting site, but like kind of in that direction. And, you know, I was talking to somebody about it. I'm like, it's the same as like a magician, like a human magician. If they know you're looking, they're not going to do the trick. Mm. Why would they? Right? Like, yeah, you can do the trick if I can look under the table. Well, I'm not going to do the trick. Mm-hmm. You just ruined the trick. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's the same thing. Anyway, yeah. The gifting site, that's a whole other thing. I was kind of skeptical about it, but the gifting site that they had, they said that all the rocks that were at the gifting site, something else had brought there. And that's what started them kind of compiling them, collecting them, and leaving these things gifts. And so I played with it a little bit, and we did see some things move around, you know, overnight. Things would move and stuff like that. Again, can I say definitively that a human being didn't just go out there and do it? I of course I can't, right? I don't think they did. I don't think anybody has any motivation to, you know? And then that kind of brings me into this stuff. So
the rock collection.
The rock collection.
For people listening.
Yeah. So the Squatch Watchers had an area close to where they were able to cast a print. Mm-hmm. And they had a Pepsi hanging from a tree. And the tree had like a V in it. And in response to the Pepsi gift, something had stuffed this rock in the tree. In like the V of the tree, right? And so I didn't think much of it at the time. I filmed it and stuff like that, but I just didn't really think much of it. And then I started thinking, oh, well, like if Sasquatch did leave it there, maybe there's some hair, right? So my first initial interest in that rock was just to see if I could find some hair on it or something. So I take the rock out of the tree and like Taylor was like, dude, take it home with you, you know? So I take it out of the tree and I'm looking for hair and everything like that, but I can't find anything. So I'm like, I'll take it home anyway, souvenir, you know? And then on the way out of that area, I found a right across from where that area of weirdness is, that like acre of that, for lack of a better term, haunted acre, right? On the other side of the gravel path was a stump, and the stump had three rocks stuffed in the stump. And I called the guys. I was like, did you guys leave this? Is this another gifting site? Like, what is this? And they were like, we have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I sent them pictures of it and everything. They were like, we've never seen it. But the rocks had been there a while. This one was in the stump. It actually had moss growing on it when I found it. So anyway, I took this one home. I left the stump intact because I didn't know what it was. And I wanted to check with the property owner first. I wanted to check with as many people as I could, because I thought, well, maybe somebody just thought they were interesting and put them there when they were doing the construction on the trail or something, you know. Nobody knew anything about them. So I took this rock home, thought nothing of it other than that it was a rock. But then the more I looked at it and the more I thought about the pictures I'd taken of these.
Very similar.
I started to think that they had been carved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so this little angle here on it, I thought was just, I was like, that's just really interesting. And then the more I held it, I was like, I really think this thing has been worked in some way. And so then I got really curious about this rock. And so then I went back to the stump and I'll show you the ones that were in the stump.
So you had gone home and then went back to the property?
I kept going back. Oh, gotcha. Yeah. This just kept escalating. So that was one of them. And that one was interesting because—
This was stuffed in a stump
that
too?
That was stuffed in a stump, yeah. Okay. That was stuffed in a stump with this one and with this one.
Before you go too much further here, do you know what kind of rocks these are? Are they native to the area?
So these two, I believe, are sandstone. I forget what you call that. That's the kind of stone you would use. Right? Yeah, yeah. And it's like stuff you would kind of use it as gravel, right? Mm-hmm. So like this one and that one, I found interesting because they seemed like they could have even been made from some of the material that they'd brought in to use for the trail.
Okay.
I don't know, but they definitely, I mean, this one definitely seems chipped, could have been natural. This one obviously has a basic arrowhead type situation going on.
That's what I was thinking too.
Right. Now this one really tripped me out because I don't know if you can see that.
The lines?
The lines, yes. Sorry.
You can move them up, Mike.
I think that's an eye.
An eye?
Yeah.
Like an eye put there, or
no, like fossilized, like originally it was carved to be a face. I think this is I think this is a piece of something.
So how old do you think this is?
I have no idea.
I think, see what you're talking about now.
Yeah, I think very old. And if you look above it, you can even see like little lines on the eyebrow. And if you look here, you can see carving marks as well. Mm. Stylistically, it's going to be impossible to pick up on camera without like really good lighting. Mm. I took these home and went mad scientist and like hit them with every light from every angle to try to like really see where the carving marks are.
Yeah.
I think this was a face at one time. I think that this may be part of like either part of a wall or part of some kind of it's damaged, whatever it is, or maybe it's something they started and never finished. But it's odd, and the shape of it tripped me out because it was so similar to this one.
Mm.
But this is a hand tool. You can put your finger right there, and you can hold it right there, and it has a point, and you can carve with it.
So what do you think? I mean, is this like an ancient civilization that was in North Carolina at one time, like Native Americans or what?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Well, here's what I think is a piece of stone pottery I found out there as well. This one wasn't in a gifting spot, but
it was or wasn't?
It was close to it. It was close to where this one was found.
Hmm.
Once I started thinking that maybe we were looking at some kind of artifacts, then I started like looking for artifacts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how old they are. My guess would be about as old as it gets, you know. I'm sure you've talked about it a million times, the idea of North American giants that used to live here, mm-hmm. right? All of the Native American legends talk about this, and they all say that the people that built the mounds were these cannibal giants and that they had wars with them and they drove them off. Most Native American cultures view mounds that we have in North America as haunted. Mm. Most of them do. Like there's the Etowah Mounds in North Georgia. Mm-hmm. Those were abandoned. Nobody lived there until white people got there. And they were like, well, there's nobody here.
It's beautiful land. Yeah. Why not live here? Right. This is great.
Yeah, exactly. I believe that this is part of, I guess, what people would call the Mississippian culture. Mm. And they call them the Mississippians because they started to discover their mounds on the Mississippi. We don't know really anything about them other than they were the mound builders, right? They were reported to be giants, reported to be very evil, reported to be here before the Native Americans got here. And they, typically in the legends are cannibals, but they built the mounds. They did great works. They had a great civilization, mm-hmm. right? And they, then it starts to tie into South American mythology as well, because in South American mythology, they talk about the pyramids that are in South America being built by a civilization that was there before the South American Indians that came from the north. And they literally describe them as coming down from the north and building these civilizations. My little total amateur theory is that the tribes in North America got sick of the oppression that was going down and somehow drove them out.
Hmm.
And then they established their civilizations in South America. Before eventually even the South American Indians would have wars with them and kill them.
Hmm.
And that's according to their legends, not mine, right? So anyway, I started to kick around. And actually, Taylor Cook and I found this one together. This piece, I think, is the most important of the bunch.
Hmm.
This was found just a few feet away from where I found this in that tree. This was in the ground. The only thing that was sticking out of the ground was this side of it. I believe this is an idol, and it's a dual natured god. That's what I think we're looking at. People would call it effigy. I mean, I'm adding religious context to it. We don't know for sure that there was a religious context, but it's representational. You have on this side, you have a bird. I don't know, you can see the eye and the shape of the wing that comes out. You can even see feather marks on the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then on this side, it's a dragon. And I don't know if you can see it in this lighting, but there's a large like circular eye with like a slit in it there. And there's a little hand underneath it.
Yeah.
That comes down off this shoulder.
Yeah, I can see that. So this was found in the same spot as that one?
Yeah, and compare the two. Look at them next to each other.
I mean, you really kind of, Jack, if you want to flip the camera.
Totally different materials.
Same kind of cuts. Man.
Not a trip?
It is trippy. Yeah. Here, can you take that one?
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. So, so
one last thing about that statue before we move on. Look at this area,
mm-hmm.
and then notice the side of it. It has a concrete type material on it. It's not just a rock.
It's porous.
And it seems to be molded.
Yeah, almost like this part here almost feels like it's not.
It was added.
Yeah, like it's not part of everything else.
Yeah, I think so. I think that may be a composite material.
Hmm. This would be really old.
Yeah.
This would be really old.
You know, there's a lot of speculation that some of the bricks, I think in Ollantaytambo, if I'm remembering correctly and pronouncing correctly, in South America, there's a lot of speculation that people believe they were early uses of geopolymer, meaning like a type of concrete. I think that's probably true. And yeah, that's just my theory. I'm dying for somebody serious to look. If you want to give Tim Alberino a call or any of those guys to give this guy a look.
I don't know.
I'm dying to get somebody that has any kind of like open-minded archaeological connections to look at this.
I almost wonder if Derek Olson would have thoughts on it, because I mean he's like he goes all over the world mm-hmm. looking for megalithic structures, and I wonder if he'd have some thoughts on this or maybe have connections to some people. That's interesting.
I would love for somebody to take a legitimate look at it. Of course, I've been accused of, what do you call it?
Pareidolia?
Yeah, but that's not what that is.
Yeah.
Like that's definitely unusual and representational.
I mean, Derek's Instagram is Stargate Voyager, if you want to look him up.
Okay.
And I can connect with him too. But yeah, Stargate Voyager on Instagram, and he's got a podcast too. But I think he would be probably the starting point.
Yeah.
There's also a guy, Jimmy Corsetti. He's got a real large following and does similar things. But he's kind of hard to pin down. I would start with Derek for sure.
Okay.
But that's really interesting. It's funny because somebody that I trust a lot texted me yesterday and he said, "Hey, I just want to let you know, I really feel like there's some kind of dark force or dark entity that's going to be coming your way in the next day or so." And then you bring in this effigy. I'm just like, okay, all right. Well, there it is. Let me touch it some more.
You know? Well, look, I did pray over him if it makes you feel better.
Bro, listen, you're talking to a guy who doesn't get scared about that stuff. Yeah. Like, people are like, "Oh, you're so scared of episode 666, you skipped it." I'm like, I skipped it to troll you and it worked. Yeah, like I skipped it to get your reaction. You know, like I get one time, 666 episodes. It was my first chance. I had a chance to troll you, and I did it. You know, so
nice.
Yeah, no, I did. I'm not fearful at all.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. It was funny. I have a friend that's a Native American, like through and through. I'm very connected to his community and everything. And I was showing him. I told him about it, and he was like already believing in Bigfoot and telling me all their things about Bigfoot and the whole thing. You know. And I was like, "Well, why don't you come over to the house and take a look at him, you know?" And we're looking at it and everything like that. And then all of a sudden he goes, "Oh, why are you letting me touch this?" He's like, "You got to put tobacco in this," and the whole thing. And I was like, "All right, if you got a cigarette, man, you can throw it in there."
Yeah.
That's a trip. So what does it mean? Right. If, why would, these are the dots that I was, you know, my buddy was like, dude, you were drinking out of a fire hose out there. Like, cause it was like so much information. Like you go out there looking for Bigfoot and then like, it gets weirder and weirder and weirder and weirder.
Yeah.
And then when I took that home and realized what I was looking at or what I believe it is, and I do believe that it's an idol. I can't think of anything else it could possibly be. I think that it fits with, this is me totally jumping the shark maybe, but I think it fits with the motifs of Quetzalcoatl, which was the one of the chief deities of the Aztecs. The Mayans called him Kukulkan. Had several different names in the Mesoamerican world, but it's a feathered serpent. He's also called the twin. Okay. So he has a dual nature. This has a dual nature, right? On one side, it appears to be a bird. On the other side, very reptilian. I mean, like, look at the shape of that head, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you have the bird dragon motif right here. I'm not sure that that's not the earliest depiction of Quetzalcoatl that we know of. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. But if that's true, then what does it mean? Well, then it might mean that all those legends are true, for one. It might mean that the, by the way, there are burial mounds on this property as well.
I didn't really
mention that. Yeah. Not these giant earthworks that we're used to seeing, but like rock piles, right? Mm-hmm. So if that's true, then it may also lend itself to the idea that what the North American natives were talking about was true, that there was this priest class that lived here a long time ago that were either killed or driven away. And it may also be true that that giant priest class went down to South America and set all that stuff up. You get into the elongated skulls, right? Bigfoot often, you know, the sagittal crest thing fits very neatly with an elongated skull as well. I don't know exactly what it means, but my guess is that it means they're all worshiping the same thing. And it's not just exclusive to the Americas. Of course, you have this bird veneration, serpent veneration all over the world, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's as old as time. And of course, with the, you know, the biblical kind of idea, obviously that's like a pretty good, you know, pretty good candidate for Satan.
Yeah. Is this like, so did you say that this stems from like Mayan culture?
I'm not saying it's from Mayan culture. I'm saying that probably it predates it.
Mm.
But
well, even that then, I mean, so with you looking into this stuff, have you come across the Mayan civilization that they discovered in Georgia?
Yeah. 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 For sure. And I haven't got to go there and investigate.
I don't think
it yet.
You can.
Yeah, I think it's
guarded by the government.
Yeah, I think it is too. So there's all that could be a whole other conversation. So the Itzamaya, the Creek Indians, were also and nobody stoned me here because I could get this wrong. I think it was the Creeks that were called the Itzamaya. That goes into Miami. Like all of these peoples associated themselves with Mayans. Mm. And so I think what probably happened, and I know we're getting way off Bigfoot here, my guess is what happened is this religion was here, made the serpent mounds in Ohio, all of those things, right? All of the huge, which by the way, the mounds in North America, I'm going to give a hot take here. I don't think they're all mounds. I think a lot of them are buried pyramids.
Oh yeah, of course.
Right? But then they went down, established those civilizations. You can see traces of the original civilization, but then that civilization from the south also came back up.
Mm.
So it's a lot of cross pollination. Like yeah. So
just go to overlap?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know how I drift. I just kept drifting towards the rocks. Yeah. The lure of it all, you know,
just sucks me in.
They did suck me in, man. When I first found them, I was like, I'm going to go bananas staring at these rocks, yeah. You know, because I was just like, researching everything I could find.
My husband likes rocks now.
It was rough.
What's her reaction to this? I mean, she married a guy who wasn't into Bigfoot. Now he's like, he's finding, you know, dragons on rocks and talking to Bigfoot.
She's pretty open-minded. Yeah. So yeah, she understands. She believes that I'm right. She's just like, yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
But so.
It's funny. I ask these questions and a lot of us guys that are doing this stuff, we got wives that are just like, yeah, I believe, but they're not like, I'm like, so when do you want to jump through a portal with me? She's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, she's like totally indifferent, which is probably a very good thing. Like, it's probably very good. Yeah.
Somebody needs to take care of the kids.
Totally. So anyway, the rest of the stuff I think are more like tools. This one I'll show you.
Please. Though. Yeah.
I think now I can't swear that this is associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that there was some gold mining that went on, so this may be an artifact from that.
Mm.
But that rock has been melted.
Oh, yeah, you can see that.
Yeah. And so, again, going back to kind of my idea that some of this stuff is like more modern techniques than older techniques. That rock's definitely been melted. I don't know by what or by who, but...
And this is North Carolina or Georgia?
North Carolina, yeah. I have found stuff in Georgia too.
All right. How far away, and I can't remember the name of these lakes. There's like these lakes in Georgia, or not Georgia, North Carolina, that are like almost like perfectly round. I forget what they're called, but there's a theory that there was an asteroid that hit up it during the Ice Age up in Michigan, like where the Great Lakes mm-hmm. are. And it when it hit, like giant pieces of, I don't know, ice and rock or whatever flew hundreds of miles. And they believe that some of these lakes that we have in North Carolina were formed from that impact.
Oh, wow.
And it just kind of hit me because I was like, I wonder if like something like that kind of an impact would cause melting.
I don't know.
That'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I found it unusual given all the other stuff that I found. But, you know, like I found, I believe this is a hand tool. I think those are little hatchet heads here. Very, very much, you know, a matching set there if you want to check those guys out.
Yeah, see how they would tie it up.
Yeah. And then, I won't spend too much time on it because we'll get way too off track. But like this one we found in North Carolina, and I think this is probably made for some kind of a hand tool. But then I found this one in an area of suspect, if you will, in North Georgia. And I think that they're like stylistically the same.
Oh, yeah.
Very different material, stylistically the same.
Mm-hmm.
And where I found that other, the one that's like a white quartz, I found a lot of other little things that I believe to be artifacts as well.
Yeah. When we were in Utah, we found, well, I didn't find, Christian had found some Native American artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really takes an eye for this stuff. Like I had a friend that him and his siblings, they could go out and find four-leaf clovers, no problem.
Right.
Anytime they wanted to, find them. To this day, have never found a four-leaf clover, you know? And and Christian has an eye and he's picking things up and stuff and he's giving some of the stuff to my son. And, you know, so it takes an eye to be able to find the stuff. And then like an open mind to saying, it's not just a rock.
Right. Well, the hard part is that none of this fits with what we know of in terms of North American archaeology. None of it does. None of the stuff that I found does. So, you know, I have made attempts to try to get people to look at it and they're like, nah, we're good.
Mm-hmm. Why? Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think part of it, to be fair to the archaeologists, I think part of it is that a lot of people do shove rocks in their face and are like, look at it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's part of it. I think they're used to crackpots, you know, thinking that they found, you know, the secret to the universe or something.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them did. Maybe they're just not open-minded enough to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I since I found all this stuff, I went on all these different like forums about people that are, you know, into weird archaeology and they'll post pictures of all the stuff they found. And I'm like, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm like,
yeah,
I don't think so. Some of it is, and some of it's very similar to the stuff that I found. So there are people that are aware of this like period of artifacts in North America. But it's very new. Like nobody's talking about it. And I think this one if none of them else, if you threw all the rest of them away, except for maybe that piece of pottery, if you threw all the rest of them away and said, they're just very interesting rocks. How do you explain that one, man?
Yeah.
Like I can't explain that one. And again, going with the angles of the cuts on these things, man, they all have like this weird angled cut. Like it's so stylistically specific. Anyway, that's my rock rant. You want to talk about some dead animals?
Man, that's crazy though. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I always wanted to be, do the archaeologist thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always found the Indiana Jones real cool, you know?
Right.
And
that's what I felt like out there, man.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like I found my version of Indiana Jones where I'm out there hunting monsters and stuff, and not so much archaeology because I don't know what I'm looking at. And I was convinced that I was too stupid to be an archaeologist. So I scrapped that early on. Unfortunately, I thought I was a dumb kid, and I probably was, but still, I wish I would have had the ability to push through that and pursue it, because I still find archaeology fascinating. Like, and not even like overseas. When I was a kid, it was like, ooh, the pyramids.
Right.
And stuff. But it's like here. The stuff is here.
America is crazy.
It's
crazy.
Littered with ancient stuff. Yeah. And for whatever reason, they want to deny it.
Barely talk about it.
Yeah, they don't want to talk.
Barely talk about it. And, you know, going back to the Indiana Jones thing, one thing that since this has happened, right, whenever anybody is like, hey, there's a Bigfoot thing, whatever, I'm like, did you see any rocks?
So Bigfoot was your gateway to rocks. That's wild.
I kid you not. I had a friend of mine was like, you've got to stop talking about these freaking rocks, man. I'm like, dude, this is the most important part of the whole deal. But then it started making me think of like, you know, like the Curse of the Mummy, right? What if that's what this was? What if these are like spirits for, you know, spirits of whatever was there before? And I think that the message that they wanted to send was that we're still here, right? That's how I read it, what I was looking at. Because, you know, people are like, Bigfoot didn't carve those. I'm like, dude, I never said Bigfoot carved these, right? Like, I think these are probably thousands and thousands of years old. Yeah. But I do think that it's related to the phenomenon that's out there. I do think that God knows what else is out there. You know, who knows? This is stuff I just found kicking up dirt, you know? But I think that for God's sakes, they put these out, or something did.
Yeah.
Something put these out. This one in stuffed specifically in, a gifting spot.
It could have been any rock. And
But it's this.
Yeah.
And you know, I started to almost trip out because I was like, why am I figuring this out? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Again, not to go down too much of a rabbit hole, but I was in North Georgia, the place that I found that white quartz. And I was just walking a trail that I walked a million times, and I saw some stick structures that reminded me of some stuff I saw in North Carolina. And I was like, I'm going to check it out, you know? So I pull my phone out and I start filming it. And as I'm walking down the hill, there's a rock stuffed in a stump.
Really?
Yeah. And it's been carved, you know? So anyway, enough of the rocks. gifting spot area.
Mm-hmm.
I do think this is important and compelling. The gifting spot area, once I realized what all this was, I was like, all right, I think this is a religion. I think that this is a religious thing. And I know people have talked about this, the controversy of gifting spots a lot, because it is just an altar, right? You've mm-hmm. got an altar out there, you're interacting with this thing. And so that really started to get to me. And I was like, and maybe a little paranoia, not gonna lie, I started to like, what kind of deep water am I in here, you know? And I was like, I really think we should tear that gifting spot down. Like, I think that's got to go, man. You guys have been communing with the dead this whole time or something else, right? And so I was like, I think that's got to go. I think it's an altar. And so I went out there the time that I said, I had the rock thrown on the 360 camera. I went out there with my friend. Our sole purpose was to look for more artifacts. That's what I was going out there for. By this point, I was done looking for Bigfoot. Like, if more Bigfoot stuff happened, cool. I just wanted to see if I could find more rocks. Like, I'm not even kidding, man. And so we went out there to do that. And then we had a few unusual things happen. And that night we were just hanging out, and I don't know why, Tony, I don't know why I didn't roll anything when I did this.
It happens.
Nothing. I didn't roll audio. I didn't roll video. I didn't roll anything. He and I were talking. I was like, man, let's go out there and tear that gifting spot down. He was like, all right, whatever.
And who are you talking to?
Just a friend of mine that came out with me. Yeah.
In North Carolina?
Yeah. He came out with me to North Carolina, not from North Carolina.
Would the Squatch Watcher guys be okay with that?
Yeah. I asked him before I did it. Yeah. I asked him before I did it. And I told him what I thought was going on. I was like, I just think it's best just not to do it, you know? And they were cool with it. They gave me the blessing, you know, and so did the property owner and everything. And so I went out there and we tore it down. And when I tore it down, I heard this cry. I heard it. It sounded like a cross between an owl and a dog howling. And it was the saddest sound you've ever heard, to the point that my friend was like, aw, like literally said that in response to what we were hearing. And I was like, dude, don't give into that. Like, don't feel sorry for it. And I don't know why I was being such like a hard line about it, you know? And I know a lot of people can criticize me for that and say that I'm just going out here picking on Sasquatch or whatever. That really happened. The next day, he went out to go use the bathroom. And this is all on film. He went out to go use the bathroom, and these two dogs were out there. We'd never seen dogs on the property ever until this time. Two dogs were out there. One of them had one blue eye and one brown eye. And one of them was just this brown dog. When he was relieving himself, he noticed the dogs. And so he went to go follow the dogs. And the dogs led him to a body of a deer that's neck had been snapped and twisted around its body. And a buzzard. It appeared that the buzzard tried to eat the deer, and then the buzzard died. So the body of the buzzard and the body of the deer were laying right next to each other. And the neck was so obviously broken. Like, there was no blood. There's no blood anywhere. The deer had obviously, something had been trying to feed on the deer. Maybe it was just the buzzard. I don't know. It's possible that there was no blood due just to coagulation, but I've since heard a lot, and this is on the first episode of my documentary, the last part of the first episode. I've since interviewed some people that had their dogs killed in exactly the same way, with their neck bent around, snapped like that, and their blood was drained. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened to that deer. I think its blood was drained. Its neck was dead, and they described it exactly the same. The neck was snapped, and the animal was laid down. And the buzzard, again, dead right next to it. And I know you're probably familiar with the idea that when these things kill, nothing eats the dead bodies, right? I went out there months later, and nothing had eaten those things. Hmm. Nothing. The deer had been moved underneath a structure, like a Bigfoot structure, but it just decomposed where it lay. The buzzard just decomposed where it lay. It never took the buzzard off, but nothing fed on it. All the bones were intact. The hair, it was like bones and hair, right? I think it killed it because we tore that down. I'm pretty sure it did. Yeah, I think it was trying to send a message, trying to send like I said, a fear. I think their desire is either fear or awe, because either one of those puts you below them, right? That's my theory.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, that's Bigfoot. Old Bigfoot up to his old tricks, or whatever.
Whatever it was.
Yeah, whatever it is. All fascinating stuff, man. You got me wanting to go out to this property, and you know, I just so happen to be going to North Carolina in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to hit him up and say, hey, can I visit?
Yeah, you should.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. You know, I want to check out the no-go zone and see what's up.
Well, I tore it all down.
Wait, the acre area?
That's where every stick structure down I could find.
Oh, come on, man.
I did, man. I was killing after me. After it killed the deer, I was mad. To be honest, I was like, I think, you know, and again, I actually took a page out of Scott Carpenter on this one. I was like, I think this actually, I don't think you guys really want these things hanging out, right? Like that was my thought process at that point. At that point, I was like, I think these things should leave.
Where are they going to go?
I think they went across the river, but that's another story.
Do we have connections to the owner on the other side of the river?
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. I'll just go over there.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. I know, guys. I know I'm a Bigfoot bully. I know.
A Bigfoot bully or a Bigfoot downer, either one.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Listen, man, this was a good time. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming out and talking.
It was fun, Tony. Yeah.
Awesome. Let's wrap it.
Trouble seems to follow me, that's why I pack my name. Orange mixed in the rice.